are listening to Radio Mobile. Hello everybody and welcome to tonight's stream. It is of course the Friday night stream, so I usually talk about either the news or one big issue that I think is particularly important. And obviously tonight, the big issue that is particularly important is the issue of the Palestine Action activists being cleared of aggravated burglary. And this is a very, very interesting subject. It's been covered in the press, but it has a wide range of implications for both the state, for the far left, and pro-ethnic minority groups. And it also has some implications for nationalists. And we're going to talk about all of those things and a few more that you might not have thought of. So it's going to be an interesting stream. Now, we're live tonight on Odyssey, we're live on Rumble, we're live on DLive, and we're live on Entropy. Please do share the links if you think this is an interesting stream, if you think anyone's going to get a lot out of this, if you think this is going to be the kind of stream people would like to hear about and like the information therein. It is pretty important, and it does relate to our struggle, especially our struggle in the courts and the current system of jury trials. And that's quite an interesting topic, really, and we'll be covering that as well at length. Now, if you like my work, if you like what I do, if you think that what I do is important, if you think me working for the movement as I do, doing all the things that I do, not just the streams, but also the real life work, also the work in terms of, providing the leaflets, the banners, getting involved in activism, organising protests, and doing all the things I do as part of Patriotic Alternative, please do consider giving a small donation tonight, $3, $5, $10, whatever you can afford or whatever you think this stream or my work is worth. It's all very gratefully received. And as I always say, if everyone just gave a little bit, it would be an immense help. And really, we would be the best funded movement in the world. You know, if you imagine if someone, some of these bigger streams, people just gave $1 each, everyone watching it, that would be incredible. It would really push us to the stratosphere, and most people wouldn't notice a dollar missing from their bank accounts. Anyway, if you want to donate live on the show, you can do. And as always with these kind of streams, I'll do a question and answer session at the end, and also it can be a bit of an ask me anything if people want to fire questions over and want them answering, regardless of how random they are. I can always do that at the end. Now, if you're watching on replay and you like these streams, you can also donate on replay. It's very, very easy to do. Donating on replay can be done via Rumble or Entropy. All those links are in the chat, and anything is gratefully received. You can also donate via crypto. All the crypto links are in the description below. And finally, you can contact me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com, and you can download my book for free at www.thefallofwesternman.com. And remember, everything I've done is free. Everything is available in the public domain for free. Nothing has ever gone behind a paywall, nor will it. So nothing is paid content. I do rely on donations, but I never put important information, ideas, or basically videos that could help people and are shareable behind paywalls. Everything is here for you to look at for free on my channels. So thank you so much in advance for those who do choose to give a small donation tonight. It's very much appreciated. Now, let's get into the stream. And before we do, I'm going to give you my usual disclaimer. Now, I'm going to be talking about a lot of issues tonight. Some of these issues are very, very contentious. So please, please watch the video. Now, every time I do a video like this, it gets to a certain point where I'm giving my opinions, and some people cash out, some people give up, some people turn off the stream, some people are like, oh, I'm not watching anymore, he's enraged me, and they don't actually watch to the end of the video. And I've even had people message me about videos, about streams, and said, look, I turned off because you said this. And then I'll write back and say, well, actually, by the end of the stream, I said this, and I started off presenting my points, and then I came around to this conclusion, and they were like, well, I never ended up watching it all. I'm like, well, maybe you should have done that before you turned it off or sent me an angry email. And please do watch it. Please do stick around because this is important. Now, the second thing I'm going to say is I'm well aware that Palestine Action are a proscribed group. They were proscribed under the new terror legislation, and the person who proscribed them was Yvette Cooper. And as such, I am not endorsing Palestine Action, nor am I asking anyone else to endorse Palestine Action. I am not telling anyone to get involved in them. I am not lending them my support, nor am I saying that anyone should advocate for them in any way, whether it be in real life, on the streets, online, or by any other means, be that verbal, written, or any form of electronic communication or other form of communication that I haven't mentioned. That's an important disclaimer because I don't want to be arrested for shilling for this group when I am not shilling for this group. That's very important. So please bear that in mind. I am not in any way lending my support to this group. However, I am going to discuss them in a critical manner. And there is a good reason why I am producing this video. Now, the obvious one is I do have quite a large American viewership, and there are a lot of Americans out there who are very much invested in the Israel-Palestine struggle. And some of them were really, really celebrating at these activists being cleared. And I want to put this in perspective from a British point of view, from somebody who understands why these people were cleared, what it means, and the implications of them being cleared, and the implications for the state, for the activists themselves, for their cause, but also for nationalists. I think this is quite important. But this actually goes further than this. I think it's worthy of discussion because, as you'll see throughout tonight, I think this case and the fact these people were found not guilty of aggravated burglary is actually an important sign of how the UK is changing and not changing for the better. You see, if you look at this on the surface and you're somebody who is really invested in the issue of the Israel-Palestine conflict, you might come to what is actually an erroneous conclusion, that this decision is a decision that shows that the UK is somehow waking up, that white Britons are coming to their senses when it comes to Israel-Palestine. And this is, you know, indigenous Brits putting a middle finger up to the Zionist power structure in the UK. And it shows that, you know, indigenous Brits have had enough of being run by Zionists. Now, I don't think that's the case. And I'm going to go through this and point out why it isn't the case. But I'm also talking about this tonight because I've spoken about something which I'm going to talk about briefly now. And I've spoken about this quite a bit. I've described Britain as becoming a little bit like a multi-ethnic sectarian society. I've likened mainland Britain to Belfast in the sort of 1970s and 80s, but rather than it being divided along the lines of Catholic and Protestant, it's divided along the lines of multiple ethnic groups. And these ethnic groups are very complex because it isn't just Hindus, Muslims, it's Hindus, Shiite Muslims, Sunni Muslims, it's blacks, but not just black people as a group, black people who live in different postcodes, blacks of African descent and blacks of Caribbean descent. It's very interesting how divided the country is, but it's not just divided along the lines of ethnicity. It's also divided along the lines of political belief and whether you are, for want of a better term, left-leaning or right-leaning. And I also think this is interesting because when Palestine Action were banned, if people remember at the time, I did a stream at the time covering this, and I made a number of points about how I believed the ban of, or the prescription of, Palestine Action was something that was actually quite dangerous for nationalists because they were prescribed under terror legislation, and terrorism is the use or threat of violence in order to bring about social, political or religious change. And that violence is something where individuals or institutions are threatened. But this was a case of crimes being committed in the name of a cause which weren't historically described as terrorism. In fact, the crimes in this case, this aggravated burglary, would be described very differently, would fall under legislation that's existed for centuries under English law. So aggravated burglary is something that has existed for centuries. It's not part of the modern terror discourse or modern terror legislation. But for this act, the group were banned. And I said that sets a very, very frightening and worrying precedent that a group can commit a criminal act which isn't necessarily associated with what normal people would believe was terrorism, yet that act could get groups banned. And I said that could affect nationalists in a number of ways. So, for example, if criminal damage, which this was, if aggravated burglary, which this was something that could lead to a group being banned under terror legislation, I sort of floated the idea that what if you had a group of nationalists and they were out protesting, and some of those nationalists climbed up a statue or up a building and hung a banner or did something that was technically to the letter of the law, criminal damage, that could lead to that group under the precedent that has been set here potentially being outlawed as a terrorist group. So I said this was quite worrying. And whilst I'm certainly not voicing support for Palestine Action, I have always pointed out that the prescription of Palestine Action, in my opinion, is not only a little bit shaky legally, and Palestine Action are in the process at the moment of taking this through the High Court, but it could set, if it stands, a very damaging precedent that would not only affect certain left-wing causes, but it could affect a number of other causes. It could affect any cause. It could affect any group that was to fall foul of this new precedent. And as people know, English law is law that isn't really underwritten by a constitution in the way that American law is. English law is something that evolves over time. It's a law based on precedent. So if a bad precedent is set, that can affect everyone in a number of very, very damaging ways. So we're going to get into all that and a lot more. But first, I think we have to discuss what these Palestine Action activists did and what my feeling on their actions is. And that's important. So I'm actually going to play you a video. This comes from The Sun, and this is what the Palestine Action activists did. Now, just before I play it, there is in Britain a number of Israeli defense firms or Israeli-backed defense firms or defense firms that supply the IDF and the Israeli government operating on British soil. One of these defense firms that I'm discussing was essentially raided by Palestine Action activists. They went in there to disrupt this company, to damage it, and they did so on the basis that they claimed, they believed that these firms are basically exporting weaponry and producing tech and enabling a government to commit genocide. Now, as we know, the UN has already said that Israel has committed genocide in Gaza. That's something that has been said. So in terms of international law, that is something that can't, well, people can say, well, no, they didn't. But there is a ruling that says they have. The UN, United Nations, has looked at what has gone on in Gaza, and they have said Israel has committed genocide in Gaza. And these activists claimed they did this on humanitarian grounds to prevent further killings and to try to stop or minimize the genocide. So I'm going to show you what they actually did, and we can see if we think they broke the law. So here goes.
Oh, gas there, guys.
Get the f*** out, boys!
I'm going back.
You're not
fast
enough, mate.
I fucking heard a concussed.
Oh, okay, well then you can definitely go.
Are you going to leave or not?
I'm leaving.
Okay, yeah, leave then.
Keep it, Red Dog. Get back! Comms, more units! Drop that now! Drop that thing now!
Get off me! Taser!
Drop that! Taser! Taser! Right, stay where you are!
Forget everything.
And that clarified one thing, which I actually got a little bit wrong there. Firstly, the Palestine Action Group was proscribed for breaking into an RAF base and damaging a plane. So it was, prescribed for criminal damage, essentially. They damaged a jet at RAF Bryce Norton. Now, the first thing I'm going to say, we've all viewed the video and we're going to discuss whether we think those were legal actions or not. But the first thing we're going to say is this underlines how silly it is sending tiny little female officers to stop a break-in. I mean, what was she going to do? And it also shows that obviously the officers were not equipped to deal with this. Now, I'm going to stop short of calling them total fannies because obviously she was female. But these guys, they don't look like they could punch their way out of a wet paper bag, these Palestine Action activists. Yet they did manage to overcome the rather flimsy security guards and police officers. Now, you know, being a guy who's in his 40s, I remember when security guards, bouncers and police officers were massive. They weren't these tiny little people. But I think this shows really how liberalism has disarmed both the police and security guards. Now, the first thing I'm going to say about this is we saw them enter the building. They ram raided the building and they ram raided the building with a prison van. I don't know whether the prison van was stolen or how they acquired it, but they ram raided the building with a prison van. Very interesting. The second thing, they obviously were wielding weapons and acting in a very threatening manner. I think we can all agree with that. They entered the building illegally. They broke in. So at least there's going to be breaking and entry. I don't know how they got to aggravated burglary because I don't think they're actually burglarizing the place. They were just damaging the place. But either way, they were charged with aggravated burglary. Now, I'm going to say this. If any nationalist suggested to me that we were to commit those kind of acts at, say, an immigration center or, a law firm that was helping illegal immigrants or, you know, representing migrant rapists, I would say absolutely not. There's no way we would get away with something like this. This tells you something immediately before you even get my take and hear the rest of this. This tells you something immediately about the situation in Britain today. It tells you just how broken the legal system is. It tells you all about how broken our society is because there clearly is two-tier justice. Now, watching that, I think they did break the law. There was a clear breach of the law there. You know, they did break in. They did force entry. They were acting in a threatening way. They were damaging the equipment there. Whether that was right or whether that was wrong, they did it. And finally, they obviously did injure people. Now, whether they injured people on purpose, whether it was purposeful, whether they went in there and purposefully hit police officers with a sledgehammer, I don't know. I wasn't there. The footage wasn't great. The body cam footage wasn't what I would say was comprehensive. And I find it very interesting that those buildings don't have CCTV throughout, which gives a better view of what went on. But what we have seen, I can't honestly say whether he intended to swing the sledgehammer at the police officer. However, the police officer and others were injured due to the actions of those involved. And saying all that, I would say if that was put in front of a jury, that it was pretty well clear cut that those people broke the law. I don't think that's a controversial thing to say. I don't think that take is something that would upset many people. It obviously maybe upset the people in the video. But if you showed me that footage and said, do you think a jury looking at this completely dispassionately and from a non-politically or ethnically or racially motivated viewpoint find those people guilty? I would say, yeah, they'd be found guilty. But this is what we are going to get to, because obviously you know that the actions of Palestine Action, in this case the actions of these activists, led them to be found not guilty. They were found not guilty. They were acquitted. Now, as we see, that is quite an interesting thing. And we're going to read from the Daily Mail to find out exactly what happened. Because although I do most of this, you know, I don't use some sort of like, you know, auto cue, or I don't have little slides coming up on the screen that I read from. I just do this live. You know, to get the facts right, it's best to read from an actual newspaper and quote exactly what's happened. So I'm going to show you now exactly what has happened. And here we go. Where is it? Where is it? Can't find it now, can I? There we go. Let's share this with you. So this is from the Daily Mail. So six Palestine Action activists who raided an Israel-based defence firm's UK site have been cleared of aggravated burglary. Samuel Corner, Leona Cameo, Fatima Rajwani, Zoe Rogers, Charlotte Head and Jordan Devlin. There's always one, isn't there, where those ethnic minority names catch me out. Were accused of carrying out an attack at Elbit Systems in Bristol in the early hours of August the 6th, 2024. All six faced trial at Woolwich Crown Court over allegations they used or threatened unlawful violence and used sledgehammers as weapons after a prison van was driven into the factory. Each member of the group was acquitted of aggravated burglary, while jurors also found Ms. Rajwani, Ms. Rogers and Mr. Devlin not guilty of violent disorder. The jury deliberated for 36 hours and 34 minutes, but could not reach a verdict of charges of criminal damage against all six defendants. Corner faced a further charge of causing grievous bodily harm to Police Sergeant Kate Evans, which he denied. However, no verdict was reached on the allegation. During the trial, the officer told the court she believed her spine had been shattered when she was struck on her lower back while arresting a female activist. Yeah, women in the police force doesn't work. The blow left the officer with a fracture to her lumbar spine, as well as a large bruise on her back, which left her unable to return to work for 3 months. I mean, look, I'm not being funny, but if this guy with the cat gets the better of you, maybe you shouldn't be doing the job. This is the group as a whole. You know, I'm not being funny, guys, but like, look, tell me in the chat, guys. Are these people that you'd find threat? If these people all charged at me, all six of them at the same time, I would feel confident that I was going to get the better of them. You know what I mean? And if one of them had the sledgehammer, I'd be like, that is coming with me. And you guys are not walking away from this without injury. But these guys got the better of a police team and a load of security guys. Why is the world coming to? You know, it's just crazy. But here they are looking kind of jolly. Obviously, they're going to be jolly because they've just got off. And meanwhile, no verdict was also reached on charges of violence disorder against Ms. Cameo, Mr. Corner and Ms. Head. The six activists hugged in the dock as a dozen while their supporters cheered them on from the public gallery. Following the hearing, a Defend Our Jury spokesman said these verdicts are a huge blow to government ministers who have tried to portray Palestine Action as a violent group to justify banning it under the badly drafted terrorism legislation. Now, I actually agree with that bit there. They said Palestine Action never advocated causing harm to people, and their aim was always to save lives by causing damage. And this is important to companies like Elbit Systems, who made in Britain quadcopter drones had been killing innocent civilians in Gaza. Footage played to jurors showed the group wearing red jumpsuits and white hard hats during the raid on the factory in the early hours. Body-worn footage belonging to one of the security guards showed three of the defendants shout F off as they approached him, one holding a lighted flare and the other two wielding sledgehammers. Charity worker Miss Head, 29, charity worker, drove a prison van to the site's perimeter fence. They even had the woman driving the van. God, it's not heat, is it, guys? It's not heat. before using it as a battering ram to get into the factory around 3:30 a.m. on August the 6th. The six carried out their action in what was described by Miss Head as the craziest 20 minutes of her life before they were arrested. Prosecutors said the six tried to cause as much damage as possible and obtain information about the company. Security guards attempted to stop the group, but were sworn at and told to leave. Oh, God. You know, imagine being a security guard and you're like, no, they've used a swear word and told me to go. What can I do? They added that the guards had sledgehammers swung at them and were whipped while one was sprayed with a foam fire extinguisher. You know, what was once a student prank, the foam fire extinguisher, is now a weapon of mass destruction when used against security guards. The defendants, except Mr. Devlin, all gave evidence and told jurors they had entered the property without permission and damaged Elbit's equipment, which included computers and drones. They intended to use the sledgehammers solely to destroy property and had not planned to use violent action, the court was told. Rajiv Menon KC defending said the group had not expected security guards to enter the factory during the action or completely out of their depth. Meanwhile, the defendants generally believed their demonstration at the factory would help the Palestinian cause in Gaza, the trial heard. The court heard jury discussions had been a little intense towards the end of the week, Mr. Justice Johnson said. Before the verdicts were delivered, the judge told jurors they could go no further than they already had and no amount of time would make any material difference. The foreman agreed and the judge said, in that case, I'm not going to ask you to deliberate any further. The judge added that it is entirely understandable when working through a great deal of evidence one video to find the agreement of at least 10 people on 19 counts. They were reminded not to feel any pressure at the time, but the judge asked them to let them know if reaching verdict starts to feel impossible. He later thanked jurors for their very long period of jury service on the trial, which lasted about 12 weeks. Here's loads more pictures. It says when they were sworn in. Look, you get the idea. And there's no comments on this article because you can't have comments on this article because the defendants may be retried on the particular cases where the jury couldn't reach a conclusion. Whether that happens or not, we don't actually know at this time. So that's very interesting. And I think it's very telling that they didn't get done on this particular issue. But we're going to talk a little bit more about Palestine Action now. Now we found out what's happened. Palestine Action were banned as a terrorist group. And I just want to bring this up because this is actually pretty important. So here's something about Palestine Action. Here we go. Now, Palestine Action Prescription, volume 769, debated on Monday, the 23rd of June, 2025. The Secretary of State for the Home Department, and this is Yvette Cooper, I've decided to prescribe Palestine Action, the Section 3 of the Terrorism Act 2000. A draft prescription order will be laid in Parliament. You'll find out why I'm discussing this in a minute. Will be laid in Parliament on Monday, the 30th of June. If passed, it will make it illegal to be a member or to invite support for Palestine Action. This decision is specific to Palestine Action, does not affect lawful protest groups and other organisations campaigning on issues around Palestine or the Middle East. The disgraceful attack on Bryce Norton in the early hours of the morning on Friday, the 20th of June, is the latest in a long history of unacceptable criminal damage committed by Palestine Action. The UK's defence enterprise is vital to the nation's national security, and this government will not tolerate those who put that security at risk. Counter-terrorism policing is leading the criminal investigation to this attack. It is important that this process is free from interference and that the police are allowed to carry out their important work, gathering evidence and working to bring the perpetrators to justice. This is quite lengthy. I'm not going to read it all, but you can see where she's going here. Now, the first important thing to note about this, and I noticed this earlier, is they were prescribed for acts of criminal damage, and that is now being contested in court. But I did a little Google search here, and it was Yvette Cooper who banned them. Now, let's look into Yvette Cooper. What are Yvette Cooper's links to Israel? That's the question I asked, and I'm going to make this a little larger so hopefully you guys can see it all. Get that up on the screen so I'm not making this up. Yvette Cooper, currently the UK's foreign and formerly the Home Secretary, has several well-documented links to Israel and pro-Israel organisations through political affiliations, donations and legislative actions. She is a member of the Labour Friends of Israel. She's a long-standing supporter and member of Labour Friends of Israel, a parliamentary group that advocates for strong UK-Israel relationship and a two-state solution, although LFI recently removed its public list of parliamentary supporters. I wonder why. She has been consistently identified as a key figure within the group. Diplomatic relations. In her official capacity, she has maintained direct engagement with Israeli officials, including meetings and joint appearances with Israel's UK ambassador, Tzipi Hotovly. Probably pronounced that incorrectly. I don't really care. Financial donations. Pro-Israel donors. Cooper has received a significant financial backing from individuals and entities associated with pro-Israel lobbying. Gary Lubner, a prominent South African-born businessman and pro-Israel donor, reportedly contributed approximately £350,000 to the offices of senior Labour figures, including Yvette Cooper in 2023. Very interesting. Trevor Chin. She has also been linked to donations from Trevor Chin, a veteran and pro-Israel lobbyist and donor who supported various members of the Labour front bench. Finally, policy and legislative actions. And this is where it covers prescription of Palestine action and her stance on Gaza and the two-state solution. Now, this is very interesting because immediately I would say this presents some form of conflict of interests. She's obviously a major supporter of Israel. She takes large donations from people who campaign on behalf of Israel. She is somebody who has benefited both financially and also socially from her links to pro-Israel groups, yet she is banning groups that are critical of Israel. This presents a major conflict of interest and may help Palestine Action out in the long run. And as I said, Palestine Action are at the moment in the High Court appealing the ban. And they're currently arguing this in the High Court on a couple of different issues. But the first is, they are saying actually the same thing as me. So what I've said tonight, they have said that this broadens the definition of terrorism too far. And they're arguing the government is misusing this extremely broad terrorism law to target property damage and civil disobedience, which should be handled under standard criminal law rather than counter-terror frameworks. And obviously we've seen this with nationalism. Sam Melia dealt with under counter-terror legislation for producing stickers. How insane is that? But absolutely what happens. And we know this is happening. And this is something that affects both the left and the right. So this is where we have a little bit of an overlap in our interests. Another thing that they're arguing about is disproportionality. The lawyers for Palestine Action have argued that the ban is unprecedented and equates direct action with terrorism in a way that would have historically criminalized movements like the suffragettes. Now, this is very interesting because, as I said, English law is based on precedent. And if you're essentially writing over the precedent that was set by groups like the suffragettes, that would upset a lot of people. So obviously what these people did, in my opinion, well, not obviously because they've been acquitted, but in my opinion, if you'd have asked me, would that footage have led to a conviction? I'd have said absolutely. I would have said that those guys using a prison van to break through the fence, to break into the building, to enter the building illegally, to try to damage equipment, and then ultimately ending up in scuffles with the police, which ended up with a police officer being injured, I would say that was a clear case of a breach of the law, but they were found not guilty. Now, I'm not friends with these Palestine Action people, and I think they'd probably hate me. But I've always said we shouldn't celebrate or cheer on restrictions which affect them, which could then end up ultimately hurting us. And I'll make a bit of a weird analogy, but imagine if there were two types of bears in the wood, the brown bears and the black bears, and they were sort of competing for food and resources before the long winter when they hibernated. Now, obviously, there are people out there putting down bear traps, but if you were the black bears, you wouldn't be like, hey, why don't the trappers put down some more traps? You know, it might thin out the brown bears. Would it also thin out you guys? You know, if you are any part of the bear population, whether you are a brown bear or a black bear, you don't want more bear traps in the woods. Because although they may catch some of your competitors, they may also catch you, your friends, and your family. And although we are not friends with Palestine Action, although they're not friends with us, they are to a degree political dissidents, and we are also political dissidents. So putting down traps for just being dealt with under normal law, under the standard law, it doesn't need special terrorism legislation. But they were acquitted. And I think this is going to be a major problem for the government. But let's have a look why they were acquitted. And this is very important. And I think there are two reasons why they were acquitted. The first is political, and the second is ethnic. And that is very, very important. Both of those issues are very, very important. I think now, when you commit a crime in the UK, a crime, whether you are found guilty of that crime largely depends on what your motivation was for that crime, what your ethnicity is, and the people who are sat on the jury. So the political and ethnic composition of the jury. And that's something that is very, very frightening. And I think that's something that we should be very, very aware of. Now, these people were tried in Woolwich, and let's just have a quick look-see at the demography of Woolwich. So I did a little bit of a Google search on the demography of Woolwich, and here we go. Woolwich, located in the Royal Borough of Greenwich, is a diverse area with a significant white British population of approximately 45%. Approximately 45%. So white Brits in Woolwich are a minority, which is higher than the average for London. The broader borough features a 60% white population, not white British, but white, alongside 23% black and 14% Asian residents. It is a densely populated urban area, experiencing growth in housing with average household incomes in some areas around £47,000. So what we're learning here is Woolwich is likely an area, well, it is an area where white Brits are a minority. So people with some kind of migrant background are the majority in Woolwich. We're the minority. And in those areas where white Brits are a minority, you usually have a disproportionate number of the white Brits who remain being liberals, being people who like the multiculturalism, being people who endorse the multiculturalism, especially in London. You know, white Brits make up about 36% of the population in London, and those in London tend to be white liberals, people with left-leaning views, people who like immigration, because the people who didn't like that have largely left. Now, that doesn't mean there are no good people in London. There are still good people in London. There are probably tens of thousands or even hundreds of thousands of decent white Brits still in London. But in a city of sort of 10 to 12 million people, 100,000 wouldn't be that many and wouldn't even make a real splash across the city, you know, if they all got behind a single candidate. That's very important to note. So when these people were tried in this particular area, they were probably sat in front of people who were not only mainly from ethnic minority backgrounds, but were also people who had political views that were left-leaning. Now, I would argue that had these people been tried in a place like Wakefield or a place like Sunderland, they would have been found absolutely guilty. If they'd been tried in a city which was sort of 80% plus white British, probably 90% white still, and most people there are just normal white working class folk, I think they would have been found guilty. I think people have looked at that footage and said, yeah, no problem. It's obvious. There's no real debate here. This isn't going to take 36 hours of deliberation. Boom. They are being found guilty. But because these people were tried in front of this very diverse jury, and a jury which naturally would have had a slant towards groups like BLM, towards groups that were pro-Palestine, and towards groups that were pro-ethnic minority or pro-causes that ethnic minorities were behind, these people, despite, in my opinion, being guilty, they were let off not because what they did wasn't illegal, but because of the reasons why they committed that illegal act. And that's very important, because we're now moving towards a period where people aren't actually being tried on what they did, but are being tried on their motivations for what they did. And you can draw parallels here with the Sam Melia case. These guys committed these actions because they said they were trying to help the Palestinian people. And although most of the jurors would have known in their heart of hearts that what they did was a clear breach of the law, if you look at the letter of the law, they let them off because they agreed with their political beliefs and believed that the cause for which they committed that crime was just. And that is a very important thing, because what you are basically doing is trying people on the basis of whether you agree with their motivation and their political beliefs. You are not trying them for the actions that they committed themselves to. And that can be worrying for a couple of reasons. That can ensure that a group like this, who committed what were undoubtedly violent acts which involved breaking and entering, they can walk free, whereas a man who puts up a few stickers can spend 2 years in jail. That is very, very worrying. And this allows the left to do whatever they want. And this isn't something which is without precedent. And I'm going to bring up one last link for the night, but something else has just popped to mind now, which further backs up what I am saying. But the other thing I'm going to bring up now is this. Now, can you remember the BLM riots over George Floyd? There was a group of Black Lives Matter protesters, or a protest broke out in Bristol, where BLM supporters marauded through the city and ended up committing an act of criminal damage. They pulled down a statue, they stomped on the statue, and then they threw the statue into the river. And that was the Edward Colston statue. Now, the four people who were arrested and charged for pulling the statue down and throwing it into the river were cleared of criminal damage. Four people accused of illegally removing a statue of Edward Colston have been cleared of criminal damage. Sage Willoughby, Rian Graham, Milo Ponsford, and Jake Skews were charged after a monument to the 17th century slave trader was pulled down and thrown into Bristol's harbourside last June. It happened during a Black Lives Matter protest in the city. Loud cheers erupted in the public gallery of Bristol Crown Court as the verdicts were returned. The defendants, who are all from Bristol apart from Mr. Ponsford, 26, who is based in Hampshire, laughed and hugged supporters who were waiting outside as they were released. Mr. Willoughby, 22, was seen taking the knee, a symbolic gesture of the BLM movement, outside court. Three of the four defendants also wore T-shirts designed by Banksy. Yeah, he's a piece of you-know-what, which featured a stencil of the toppled statue's plinth. Speaking outside the court after being acquitted, Ms. Graham said, "We just want to say thank you to so many people, because we have never been alone in this journey. We have been so supported and we are such a small part of this. There were so many people that day, so many people reverberating across the world in response to it." Mr. Willoughby denied they were trying to edit history, but said others were whitewashing history by calling Colston a virtuous man. We didn't change history. We rectified it, he said. This is a victory for Bristol. This is a victory for racial equality. And it's a victory for anybody who wants to be on the right side of history. And here they are with a little banner. We toppled Colston. So these guys got away with that. But earlier this year, there was another very interesting case, and I forget the guy's name, but maybe somebody can put it in the live chat. And this is a case of a black former Labour councillor who called for anti-migration protesters to have their throats slit, and he was allowed to walk free from court. He was found not guilty. Now, I do forget his name, but if you remember, all of the people who said things on social media against migrants ended up in jail, but a Labour councillor, a black Labour councillor, who called for anti-migrant protesters to have their throats slit, which in my opinion was far more serious and a blatant breach of the law, was allowed to walk free. And he was allowed to walk free again because he was tried in a very racially diverse area where the few whites remaining are left-leaning or liberals, and the system tried him on his political beliefs. And because he was there protesting or stirring up violence, whatever you want to say, against anti-migrant protesters, the people on the jury supported him. They supported his opinions. They believed in the same things as he did. He was on their team, so they let him off. His name was Ricky Jones. Thank you so much, Joe. So there is clear precedent in this country that basically the drive toward left-wing liberal politics and the changing demography has led to situations like this. And while some people will naturally be saying, ha, this is good because it humiliates the state, this is also very worrying for nationalists, because we now have a situation where the state can choose where to try people based on the demography and the political leanings of that area in order to ensure that the person on trial will either be found guilty or not guilty, and you can take an educated guess as to how things will play out. So if you are tried in a white working class area, and say somebody like somewhere like Wakefield or Sunderland, you're going to get a very, very different outcome, or Barnsley, somewhere like that, than you would if you were to stand trial in a place like Woolwich or a place like Bristol. And this is how the state can further warp the criminal justice system and ensure a different outcome to what you would expect. So who does this affect and how? Well, first, this does affect the state. And in this case, the state has, on the face of it, been humiliated. But have they really been humiliated? And we'll come back to that in a second. Now, this could also hurt the state, because the fact that this jury has found these guys not guilty and other charges have temporarily been dismissed because it was a hung jury on other charges, this could hurt the state further. And it could certainly embarrass Yvette Cooper, because there is now a much better chance that Palestine Action will be unprescribed. And remember, this is being heard in the High Court as we speak at the moment. Now, nationalists, how does this affect us? Well, there are some nationalists, especially those in America, who are immediately celebrating this. And I had a private message from a nationalist who was like, oh, is this, you know, this is great news. And I actually said, well, you know, maybe on the face of it, if you see these people as political dissidents being, you know, defeating the state, maybe this is good news. However, this isn't necessarily what's happened. And I pointed out the demography of Woolwich. And I'm going to say this. Had a nationalist sat in front of that same jury for saying something online like migrants do X to British girls and they should be deported, what do you think the outcome would have been? Now, that jury essentially supported the rights of those people, those six people, to storm a private business, to break and enter, to threaten people with sledgehammers, and to engage in actions that led one person to be seriously wounded. And look, you know, I laughed about a female police officer being sent to the scene. It is hilarious. It's ridiculous. But, you know, a fractured spine is not so funny and is certainly not something that, you know, I would wish on that person. It's certainly not something that I would endorse at any political activist doing. I'm not endorsing anyone going out there and breaking anyone's spines. You know, that's not what I'm endorsing. But considering they let off those Palestine action activists, how would they have treated me if I'd have made a tweet or a social media post criticizing a migrant rapist and the police had arrested me for it? I think they'd have jailed me. And I think they would have jailed any of the people arrested after Southport. I think they would have jailed any number of people for merely being critical of the multicultural society. These juries are now effectively political activists, and they are anti-nationalism. They are anti-white. And I don't think these trials in these multiracial, highly politicized areas are fair trials. I think it would be hard. When I say a fair trial, my idea of a fair trial is what the common indigenous Brit on the street would think. So common indigenous Brits on the street use terms like, oh, I've had enough of these migrants, you know, they need to go home. That's what normal people say. Normal people don't break into factories with sledgehammers. That's how it is. And I think normal people, the average indigenous Brit, would have found the Palestine action activists guilty, but would find us not guilty. And that's why increasingly people are sent to places where juries like this are selected. Now, what does this mean for the left? Well, it means the left can effectively do whatever they want. They can call for people to have their throats slit. They can break and enter. They can ram raid buildings. They can maraud at people with sledgehammers. They can engage in all forms of criminal damage, whether it be to public or private property, if they turn around and play the card that they were doing it to help ethnic minorities or to help an ethnic minority cause. And that's a very, very worrying thing. And this, to finally underline this, I'm going to say this because I said earlier, you know, they're dissidents of a sort and we're dissidents. But they're not really dissidents like we're dissidents, are they? You know, the people who stormed that factory are effectively the pets of the system. And we should never forget that. Those people support every single establishment mandated change and social shift that has happened over the last 40 years. They support Drag Queen Story Hour. They support BLM. They support mass immigration. They support the indoctrination of children. They endorse the change in laws on freedom of speech. They endorse all forms of censorship across different platforms when people are talking about race and immigration. And I'm pretty sure if you polled those six people and said, what do you think should happen to people like Mark Collett and Laura Towler and Steve Laws and Joe Marsh and Zuma Historian, I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't say we should be jailed for the good of the multicultural society. The only thing these people don't support is the British government's support of Zionism in Israel. That's the one place where these people differ with the system. So it's kind of like these guys are like, you know, the loyal pet dog that occasionally, you know, poops on the rug. These are the loyal pet dogs that do something naughty once in a while. The naughty pet dogs that once every 6 months tear up a bit of turf in the garden and annoy their owner. But for the rest of the year, they're good little pooches, because for the rest of the year, they're the people who turn up at counter demonstrations when people are outraged by things such as Drag Queen Story Hour, or they'll be there, you know, in Warwick when we're demonstrating tomorrow. They'll be there chanting against us, you know, in support of the migrants living in the hotels in the area that have been sexually abusing the girls, white girls. That's what they'll be supporting tomorrow. You know, they're the people that usually go on to be educators and indoctrinate children in schools, that help spread anti-white ideas through places of higher learning. These are the people that are effectively our sworn enemies. Now, in this case, they're against the state of Israel, but that is their outlying opinion, their only opinion that intersects with ours in some small way. But the reason they support Israel, the reason they don't support Israel is not for the same reason we don't support it. We don't support Israel because we understand what Israel is doing and that it's a Jewish supremacist state. They are against Israel because they think it's a white supremacist state. So they're wrong on more or less, you know, right? You know, so they've come to the right conclusion. Israel is bad, but for the wrong reason. So it's kind of like doing your maths homework and you've come out with the right answer, but all the working on the page is wrong. That's where these people are. So, you know, this really shows that for the left going forward, they can do whatever they want. And these people will be the same people at future BLM events. They will be the people at counter-protesting, anti-migrant protesters. These will be the people who smash more statues. These will be the people who glue themselves to the road over climate change. These are the system's pets. But every now and again, those pets do something, one thing specifically that the system doesn't like. And I think if anything, this will embolden the left to do whatever they want. And finally, what does this mean for juries? Well, unfortunately, it means what I said earlier. Your jury trial is almost predetermined depending on where it is held. You know, if I was arrested tomorrow and my trial was in Woolwich, well, you know, at that point, everything I did in the courtroom would more or less be performative because I know those people would hate me instinctively. Equally, if somebody on the left gets tried in Woolwich or gets tried in Bristol or gets tried in one of these multi-racial areas in London, they can literally have called for people to be murdered. They can have attacked people with sledgehammers and they're walking free. And that's very dangerous because all of this, when you look at what is under the surface here, what's under the waterline, when you look at the way the current is going, this all points to something we've talked about many times before. This is a two-tier justice system. It's a two-tier justice system based around ethnicity and political leaning. And do I like that? I absolutely don't. But it does prove me right. My take repeatedly is that we are speed running the route towards a multi-ethnic sectarian society. That is where we are headed. And this is one of the effects. I've said this many times. You know, there are people who have put forward many theories, some that I disagree with, things like, oh, we're going into a race war. You know, oh, you know, this will end with rivers of blood in the streets. But I've always said, no, it's going to end in a multi-ethnic sectarian society where different groups, all different ethnic groups are in conflict with each other and all vie for supremacy. But one of the effects of this and one of the indicators of this is this outcome. It is the fact that these jury trials in such areas are throwing out what are on the surface extremely illogical conclusions. And it is something which will fundamentally, I think, bring about a system where if the state wants to, they will move the trials of people who are in the nationalist cause within the wider patriotic movement to places like this, knowing that whilst it gave their pets a get out of jail free card, those same people, that same jury, would probably be happy to send us down for 5 to 10 for simply saying that we don't want to live in a multicultural society and that we oppose demographic change. And that is very worrying. Anyway, that brings me to the end of the presentation. It's almost a snug hour. We don't really have any super chats tonight, which, you know, it's not the end of the world. I do appreciate the fact people have tuned in. We do have a couple, which I will go through. But if you want to super chat, if you'd like to support my work, if you want to give something, you can do so through Entropy or directly through Rumble. And it is always very much appreciated. So please do if you want to. I'm going to read out the few we have. But as I said, there aren't many. Rights for Whites gave $15. Thank you so much. And it's a 7-month subscriber streak. So thank you so much for subscribing for so long, my friend, and for such a generous subscription. Dave Red 33 subscribed for 1 month for $5. Well, thank you so much. Again, that is very much appreciated. And Open Borders for Israel gave $5 and said, imagine if nationalists acted like Palestine Action, they would get 15 to 20 years. And that is basically a sentiment I can't disagree with. And I suppose I should close the show with that if we don't have any other super chats, because that's a very good super chat by Open Borders for Israel. Imagine if nationalists had broken in to a immigrant processing facility, or as I said earlier, a solicitor's office that deals with helping migrants game the system. Or say we'd broken in to one of these places where it was full of lifeboats. You know, these facilities where the lifeboats are launched from, and the lifeboats go out and they bring in dozens of dinghies full of migrants. You've seen them all, the RNLI lifeboats, which end up being used as a taxi service across the English Channel. Imagine if we'd broken into one of these enclosures that house lifeboats, and we damaged the lifeboats so they couldn't be used. And our argument in court was, at the moment, an unprecedented number of young white females are being attacked, sexually assaulted and raped by these small boat migrants who are essentially a major threat to our people, an existential threat to our people. And we are damaging the lifeboats in order to prevent young white girls from being raped by migrants. Do you think that would stand in court? It wouldn't stand in court. We would probably get, as I said, 15 to 20, especially if we used that level of violence that was on display in that video. If we were swinging sledgehammers, damaging property, attacking police officers and leaving a police officer with a fractured spine, somebody at my age, you'd miss your whole kids growing up. You'd miss your kids growing up. You wouldn't be back out on the street at the end of the day with a smug grin on your face. I can tell you that now. You wouldn't be out in the street celebrating. But this is two-tier Britain. And unfortunately, I fear it's only going to get much worse. Anyway, thank you to those who did super chat. And thank you to everyone who tuned in. I hope you enjoyed the stream. I hope there was something of value in it for you. If you did enjoy it, please give it a share. And remember, if you are enjoying it on replay, please do click the Entropy link and consider giving a few dollars as a super chat, or subscribe to me on Rumble. You can subscribe for just $5 a month, and that subscription is recurring and it really helps me out. Anyway, I will be back on Sunday for a stream, but I will also be out in Warwick tomorrow demonstrating against mass immigration, calling for a halt to the small boat invasion, calling for the migrant hotels to be closed, and calling for all illegal migrants to be deported. Please join me there, midday in Warwick. All the details are on social media. I hope to see you there. Hope it's not too rainy. And if you are there and you have enjoyed this stream, come up and say, hey, Mark, good stream last night, and I'll really appreciate that. Anyway, thanks so much. Look forward to seeing you tomorrow, and I'll be back on Sunday, hopefully with Laura Towler, maybe with Steve Laws, talking about Saturday's activity. Thank you, everybody. Good night. Look after yourselves. Hope to see you tomorrow. Thank you to everyone who donated so generously. Thank you all, and sleep well.